During Robert Brogdon's Olathe Buick GMC clearance event, save up to 20% on new models like the 2023 Buick Encore GX or GMC Sierra 1500. View their huge inventory at robertbrogdon.com and find your perfect match.
Kansas City's hometown sports station. Sports Radio 810 WHB Kansas City.
Company, Boulevard Brewing.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to College Football Game Day here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. As we talk college football today, the Kansas State Wildcats take the day off, so we have a little extra guest in our studio today because a member of that coaching staff didn't have to work today. But
that's right.
Yeah, just lounging and listening to college football conversation.
It's like the old days, Danny, when we were out on the road and I had my kids hanging around and other studio audience members. Watching you work. It's been 20 years.
That's right.
And they're not much older than 20, any of them. So
right.
They're used to growing up on Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock. There is Danny Klinkskill opening up College Football Game Day.
Yes, indeed. And we have fairly subsequent games today between Kansas and West Virginia, Missouri, South Carolina, as area college football fans will start to learn the vagaries of live streaming, if they haven't already. Probably if you're of a certain age, live streaming is sort of like watching the sun come up or getting out of bed. But for some other people, it's like, what? I got to do what to watch this game? Well, the Kansas game today is on ESPN Plus, and Kansas State's game next week is on ESPN Plus against Oklahoma State. So people should get ready and willing and able. I know how to do it on my computer, and I actually ordered ESPN Plus last week and then canceled it when I didn't like the events I saw for the day. But I probably will do it today, but I have never taken a live stream and put it on my TV yet. So
Yeah, there's going to be some big steps. I mean, get it on to your pad or your computer. Your phone is very, very easy for those who are used to it. So, you know, no problem there. But
yeah.
Then if you have a 50-inch HD TV that you love watching your team on, then you have to say, now I got to get it from my pad or my phone up there. Or if you get a smart TV, you can go straight to the app there. So, I mean, there's a lot of different ways, but it'll be surprising how many people who use a lot of technology still haven't made this step. And it'll be a lot of scrambling right before kickoff of when you order it.
And there's a lot of people who have not used a tremendous amount of technology. And, hey, whatever you say about streaming and saving money and pulling the plug and whatever, let's face it, turning on your television and turning on a channel is pretty easy. And a lot of people
it's pretty comforting, very
used to that.
The thing I notice mostly that we're seeing a change in is the comfort level. If your team is on channel 427 and you turn it on 20 minutes before, you can hit guide and go, okay, I know this is the right station. Guide confirms that my game's up, and you do whatever, you know, get yourself a beer or whatever you're going to do, and you know your game. But on this live streaming, most of the time, they don't let you load in until it's right on time. So they'll say, Kansas, West Virginia. You go, okay, let's turn it on. Nope, it won't turn on until right at the top of the hour. And then you get kind of nervous. Like, is it really turning on? Or am I on the right thing? And
right,
coming
up next, there's something that says that it's going to be on here.
I think they need
minutes.
To change that coming up next to give you 15 minutes of cushion of something, you know, pre-programmed.
Show some highlights or something like
just
that.
Just let you know that, okay, I'm on, I'm ready to roll. But today it starts with the big game there, Danny. And, you know, to start this day, I mean, how exciting is football around here? You think about what happened last week. KU went and won at Boston College. Missouri continues to win and play well. K-State goes to Mississippi State, and then the Chiefs win their second game in a row on the road against the Raiders, and now they're coming back to play the feature game of the week in the NFL tomorrow against the Baltimore Ravens, the home opener, all of that. I mean, it is so exciting. And another thing that we're starting to see is some good Friday night football. if you can get the ACC network. We were joking about getting online, but I don't know many people that get the ACC network to watch Kansas's big win over Boston College. Clemson's playing on there for the second time already this season. I don't think they've been watched as much as they normally would as a national championship type of feature team. But last night, we had a big event occur, and you may not be monitoring Friday Night Football very closely, but USC, who hasn't lost a home game to Utah since 1960, was the underdog, have a really tough schedule. Coach Helton's under a lot of pressure, and Utah comes in as the 10th-ranked team in the country and undefeated, and USC gets their quarterback. Their second-string quarterback gets hurt on the first series of the game. So they bring in their third-string quarterback, who had already decided he was going to transfer to Illinois, ends up not doing it, and throw him out on the field, and he lights it up. USC wins. USC just put the most likely dagger into the Pac-12's chance of making the college football playoff. They've missed the last 2 years, and now they're in big trouble. You know, Washington lost a game to Cal. Auburn's already beaten Oregon. USC's lost at BYU, and now Utah has lost. UCLA's awful. Are we really relying on Herm Edwards' Arizona State football team? So right now the Pac-12 is in big trouble already because of the game last night, unlikely to have a playoff team.
And it was really one of the only games that Utah really had a chance to lose. That's why a lot of people thought that they could make the playoff. I know Kirk Herbstreit, for instance, had selected them to be the fourth team to make the playoff because their schedule's pretty soft the rest of the way. They don't play a couple of the better teams in the Pac-12 this year. So this was their game to win or lose, perhaps, and make the playoff. And now it seems extremely unlikely that a team from that conference, which is not going to be very highly rated, can win with one loss. We'll have to wait and see on that. Let's get to the teams around here, and let's get to the teams that's taking the day off first. That's the Kansas State Wildcats. Get the first of two byes. It's a two-bye system now in college football, and it comes at what kind of a time, Stan? Is it a good time to have a bye after a great win like that? You're three games in. That timing seems okay, but when you just played your best, well, maybe not your best football, but your best result of the season, what do you think of the timing of this particular bye?
Well, I think it's fine. I think the timing would have been poor if they'd have lost. It's not a good time of year to be sitting on a loss, because when you lose to a team like Mississippi State, if K-State would have done that and they went in as the underdog, and most people all summer long never gave them any chance of competing at Mississippi State. If you would have lost, Danny, then you look back at the first two games, and no matter how much positive feel you want to have about what was done, it's just wiped away. No one gives you credit for, hey, we ran some good plays against Bowling Green. Say, who'd you play in those first games? Nichols? It just goes away, and there's just all negativity, and you sit on it for 2 weeks. That's not good. With the win, it's indifferent. You can continue to play, but I think it's fine because the excitement level, the surprise. Remember, just a month ago, not many K-State fans dreamt of being 3-0, being ranked in the coaches' poll right now, and playing to the level they are. So the slapping on the backs and the patting on the backs and the hugs and the love that these players are feeling around campus isn't good for continuation. This is just a win. You just move on. And I know Chris Klieman, who, hey, he kind of has a day off, but we took advantage of it. Yeah. He's going to be a guest on
He'll
our show.
He'll be on the show next, and we're not going to dwell too much on Kansas State because he can do that.
Yeah, he can speak for his team. But I can speak for what I think the players' attitudes. It's okay to have some enjoyment if you don't have a game in 7 days. So they got to be loved and appreciated and talked about how great Coach Klieman is and they're never going to lose another game and a great win over Mississippi State. But they got to get back to work. So I think it's fine. So they can get back to work. Chris Klieman, he doesn't get caught up in that. We'll ask him about it. But he just wins the game and moves on. These players have been around it before. But I think the excitement level, Danny, kind of shot to a new height, a surprising level of enthusiasm about K-State football and the players happened after that win at Mississippi State. So I think it's good for them to get their heads back on straight, watch football today, and say, how lucky am I to play? And, oh, by the way, how hard is it going to be in the Big 12? I've been talking to a lot of people, and I say, the Big 12 this year to me, if you didn't worry about the national championship picture and Oklahoma and that, it's like the NFL. You don't even need to ask who's favorite and who's not. Just the games are going to be competitive, starting with Kansas, West Virginia today, Oklahoma State, Texas tonight. It just on and on. The games are going to be competitive, and you better get to work. So I think it's a good time for K-State.
I think that the Big 12 kind of reminds me of Big 10 basketball a little bit, because the Big Ten over the years has not only been very competitive, but they really care about the conference championship in Big Ten basketball. And many of the teams are good. The arenas are full each and every game. The conference games are considered super important, not just, hey, when's the NCAA tournament? And I think we're going to have that feeling a little bit here in the Big 12. And I think it's better that way, because if all your focus is on making the playoff, I mean, there are only four teams are going to make it, and three of them are basically locks to do so. So there's one spot. So you might as well have other goals and appreciate the fact that maybe you're going to get to go to a better bowl, or maybe you're going to get to play in that conference championship game against Oklahoma in all likelihood. It should be really interesting. And for other teams, it's just you got to go toe-to-toe with these teams if maybe you lost one in the non-con to get those four wins you need to be bowl eligible.
Yes, and it's nice to see that there's not the drudgery of trying to finish off a football season in cold weather for any team. I mean, it could happen. Kansas needs to continue to play, and we'll talk about that. But I don't suspect it's going to happen. There's no bad teams, is my statement, in the Big 12 this year. And you really said it well, comparing it to the Big 10. But everyone should be focused on the season. All the scheduling for a national championship, well, yeah, maybe if you're Texas and Oklahoma, you take it into account. But no one else should. Just get out there and have a successful regular season is what you've got to be focused in on. And just before we let it go, Danny, because you said something very important. You said three teams are already in. I got Clemson and Alabama. I just want to make sure no one takes for granted. Who do you already have marked down as the third team?
You know, I probably overstated it.
Okay.
So you're
two are in.
I think that probably whoever is the next best team in the SEC will get
You didn't mark Georgia in.
Right.
Because we'll talk about national
Georgia
games.
Georgia or LSU is basically, I guess, who I'm thinking about in this particular scenario.
So you're already, controversy by Danny, two SEC teams in to the playoff.
Yeah, I think that, we'll see. You know, is it Wisconsin's playing good football? They have an important game today. We'll talk about some of the national games. I just saw an interesting stat, because I will probably talk about that game later, but I could well forget the stat. Jim Harbaugh's Michigan team have never won as an underdog.
0-6.
0-6 as an underdog.
He has really not sparked the way that I thought he would.
I agree.
Because starting at San Diego, which is a kind of a non-scholarship Division III or something, he dominated. And then when he went to Stanford, he did a very nice job.
Yep.
You can say Stanford's been great forever, but I don't buy into that. He made Stanford
a high-level
Pac-12 team. You say, okay, can he do it in the NFL? I thought he did a fine job with the Niners of coaching just sound football across the board. You can get into the Alex Smith and Kaepernick, and there's all kinds of things going on, but I thought he did a great job. So when he went to Michigan, his old school, with the advantages they have, I really expected more than this.
I agree.
Michigan's in a slump as a school. I think they're 1-15 in their last 16 games as an underdog, but Harbaugh hasn't changed it. He's 0-6. Well, we'll get to those national games because we got some excitement and probably some people driving and getting ready for some football today, because when you think about Missouri and South Carolina, it's game on in the SEC. And how about KU with a chance to win an opening conference game and to win two games in a row against FBS opponents? Hasn't happened since 2006 or 2008. It's been a while, but to get to be 1-0 in conference play by winning a home game where it's a pretty even game, big day today for those two teams.
Totally agree, and I hope that one thing we often talk about here on College Game Day is the fact that we get such good weather generally, you know, and that happens time after time after time. Well, today the specter of delays is certainly there, and it certainly is a phenomenon that we've experienced in the last 15 years or so. Before that, you know, hey, football, you play football in the rain or whatever, it doesn't even matter. But
lightning within 10 miles used to not be talked about,
right? And so that's a definite possibility here. We hope it times out in a proper way. I actually will bring up some weather here as we speak, but it'll be interesting to see. So let's start with the Kansas game against West Virginia. When we spoke a couple of times, Stan and I obviously do this program, then we do a podcast on DannyClinkscale.com and the Reasonably Irreverent podcast,
which comes your way, Danny?
On Mondays, generally, sometimes Tuesday, depending if the Chiefs play some Monday Night Football. But anyway, we talk college and pro football, and you were of the feeling that Kansas might be favored for today's game, but they are not. West Virginia played a very good game last week, and West Virginia is a 4.5-point favorite. And while we think, indeed, that the Big 12 is going to be very competitive and that there are no bad teams, it seems likely now that Kansas will be an underdog in every single game in the Big 12, which means they're supposed to lose them all. I don't think they will. But are you at all surprised that West Virginia comes in as a 4.5-point favorite?
Well, no, because I think they're both teams are tracking on the same level. The week one with a new coach was okay, but didn't spark any enthusiasm or confidence about where their teams were going to go this year. And then game two were real disappointments. I mean, Missouri thrashed this West Virginia team, turned over quarterback Austin Kendall as a transfer from Oklahoma, now at West Virginia. They put him under pressure. He threw interceptions, and it was Missouri all day long. West Virginia couldn't run the football, and you're looking at this new coach, Neil Brown, going, you did a lot of good things at Troy, but this West Virginia team has a lot of turnover. This is with the big boys. Your team may not be ready, and it looked like it was going to be a disastrous season for West Virginia. But last week, they go out and beat Dave Doran's North Dakota State team.
Soundly.
And just were the better team all day long. West Virginia, Neil Brown is a very smart coach, and he is very confident in what he's doing. We talked to Vic Koning on the show last week. I think he's a legitimate defensive coordinator, a very veteran guy, a guy that I know very well. But Neil Brown didn't sit tight after that second game. He changed starters, three on offense and three on defense, and went with younger kids and just said, if you're not producing, you're not playing. I think someone, did you tell me something about what the definition of stupid was? Or
right. Is it repeating the same behavior over and over again and expecting a different result?
Yeah, so he kind of laid that one out and didn't use that word probably because his fandom wouldn't like it. But he just said, we're not going to put up with this. And bang, they win against North Carolina State. So where are they? Are they a team that's talented and is used to winning 8 to 10 games and are West Virginia? Well, I can see odds makers saying, I'm going to bet on them before I bet on Kansas. But what KU did against Boston College was impressive in the second half.
Well, it was
half.
Historic. They had the largest ever road victory by a Power 5 team as a 20-plus point underdog,
yeah.
Ever.
Yeah, and they outscored in the final parts of the game or the last half or whatever you want to say, 31-7 was the score. And if they were to continue on, Kansas, it wasn't just Boston College just coming back and making it close because they're the better team. It was just getting worse and worse for them as Kansas dominated. So how much of that is that Friday night factor, weird games? How much of it is Kansas changing their offensive philosophy, putting more green grass out there? They were kind of running an LSU style where we're going to be more powerful than you. We're going to move you off the ball. We're going to block you. We got great running backs. If we continue to give them the ball, how can we lose? And then we're going to throw the ball once in a while, avoid the mistakes.
Well, in year one, you're just not going to have the kind of dudes in the offensive and defensive line that Les Miles is used to having.
Yeah, that's one part of it. And the second thing, which we've talked about Baylor, we talked about this last week on the show, you know, Baylor tried to do the same thing because when their coach came in, Matt Rhule, he came in from Temple, and they did the same thing. Power football, two men in the backfield with the quarterback, all that. And then he came to Baylor and tried to run that, and Baylor just was getting beat by everybody. Remember, he started off, he finished year 1-11, but about two-thirds of the way through the season, he said, maybe we ought to spread things out. Well, now you look at Baylor football 2019, guess what? They're still spread out because the kids that they had were used to that, felt more comfortable. A couple things happened with Kansas. I think that they didn't have the dudes to move the line. The running backs were limited because everyone was all packed. Coastal Carolina guys were all around. They couldn't get open area. You spread things out, and now you get Puka Williams and Khalil Herbert room to run on draws. You have to go out and guard the wide receivers, even if they're awful. And Kansas isn't awful out there, but it opened things up. But the other thing that happened, Danny, that's like Baylor, the players felt more comfortable. They weren't playing with their left hand. That Les Miles' new offense was like, yeah, coach, we believe in you. We'll try. But it didn't feel natural. As soon as they spread things out, got in a shotgun, everybody's like, oh, I've done this hundreds of times. Here we go. Now, how much of that was that BC was not ready for the change in strategy offensively? How much it was BC was half asleep or not very good or whatever? They beat Virginia Tech, so I don't think that they're not any good plays out here. So Kansas, with the knowledge that West Virginia's defense is going to have, how will they look today? It'll be very interesting to see. But I think the talent level, the offensive line's okay, Danny. They may not be great. They may not be SEC mashers. But they are an experienced group. For Kansas' offensive line, it's one of the best they've had in 10 years. Then you look at the backs. They got two very good backs. And Carter Stanley, you know, he's immune to getting down on himself. And I love that. You make a mistake, be naive to it. Just keep playing and give yourself a chance. He stays focused on the goal that I think all quarterbacks should. What do we need to do to win the game? Not how bad did I play in the first quarter, the second quarter. Just erase that and say, what do I need to do to win the game from here? All of that and Les Miles' calmness, commitment to the quarterback. And I think the defense has improved. They were very sound in their strategy and in their execution. They were in the right place. Boston College was trying to out-athlete them and then also trick them, and they didn't trick them at all. Kansas is where they needed to be. So this Kansas team is way better than people think. They're solid. They're starting to get confidence. But what's crazy is that does not guarantee a win. And you look at this, Danny, the upside for these teams is fine for West Virginia and Kansas, obviously. But the downside is what's scary. If West Virginia loses here and they're 1-3 and they're looking at a new coach and a lot of their guys and the pros now that they were counting on last year, do you know how upset those people are? What? When they win, they burn couches. What do they do when they lose? We haven't seen it in the Big 12. Right. So West Virginia has to win. But in Kansas, on the other side, you don't want to put the pressure on them saying, hey, we're building, we're fine. Are they going to be fine, Danny? If KU loses this opportunity against West Virginia, is all the momentum gone? Because Turner Gill beat a ranked Georgia Tech team. Remember that? Mm-hmm. His first year, you're like, whoa. They struggled early.
Week right after losing to an FCS team.
Yeah, and you go, oh, darn, there went the momentum. So today, a very interesting day, a lot of downside for both teams. A lot of downside, a lot of confidence can be broken today by the loser. A lot to be gained by the winner, but even more to be lost by the loser. Interesting game, a lot of intrigue, I think. I'm going to try to watch it, Danny. I'm not real happy. And I guess I'm going to use my iPad. Because there's so many games on, I don't think I'm going to flip it up on my TV. I'm thinking I'm going to watch Kansas on my iPad, which is really surprising.
Yeah, there you go. Let's do one more point about this game, and then I think we're going to move Missouri to after Chris Klieman so we can do it in depth and not try to gloss over it. I think the most important part of this game, Kansas-West Virginia, on both sides of the ball, is getting after the quarterback. West Virginia's done a good job of that. They have brothers, the Stills brothers, the sons of
Gary,
former Chiefs linebacker Gary Stills, and they have a sack apiece per game so far, three apiece through three games. So that's important. And on the other side, West Virginia has not been able to run the football at all. So they're going to have to throw the ball to move the ball. And if Kansas can create bad down and distance situations, which they're likely to get because West Virginia hasn't run the ball. Now, there's another thing. If they let them run the ball, that's going to be a bad sign. But they're likely going to have to throw the ball to win. So the pass rushes for each team, in my mind, are very, very important today.
Well, I think it's a great point, Danny, and I would back up just a little bit, and I'd ask myself the question, will West Virginia be able to run? And I think if they can, then that changes the dynamics.
I agree with that.
They're in week four. Okay, Neil Brown is the offensive coordinator and head coach. So he's working and trying to find things, and they're really struggling of who is West Virginia. Neil Brown's coaching style is at the opposite end of the spectrum of Dana Holgorsen. I mean, at the opposite. So the players' minds are just spinning right now. They don't know what's going on, and they don't have the great stars they had from last year to lean on. So suddenly there's so many question marks. My point is, week three was a lot different than week two for West Virginia. I think week four might be different than week three. I don't think we know about West Virginia yet. So I asked the question, is he going to be able to find a running game? Are they're saying, you know, we weren't able to run the first games just because we were going against Missouri in one of them, and we didn't know what we're doing in week one. And in week three, we started moving the ball, but now we're playing Kansas's front instead of Missouri's, and let's run the ball. If West Virginia can run the ball, then I think they'll win. If they can't run the ball, then Kansas' chances increase tremendously. We'll see about the pass rush, but I don't think that the quarterback's really in a great position having to throw the ball every down for West Virginia.
Right.
So it comes down to me, the game will be decided. If West Virginia can run when no one thinks they can run, that doesn't mean they can't run today. And if they do, I think that'll be enough for them to win. If not, I think Kansas, one way or another, ends up being the better team. They're at home. They've got the explosive running backs. West Virginia does not have the explosive players. They've got to be good down after down. And you know what that means? Passing the ball down after down. I'm not betting on that happening.
They are 123rd out of 130 FBS schools as far as rush yards per game at just 79. In-depth on Missouri and South Carolina coming up in just a little bit. But up next, we'll delve into the Kansas State Wildcats program, and who better to do it than Chris Kleiman. Just a wonderful conversation with Chris Kleiman. I mean, he's just a natural guy, and we'll have that for you next. We'll talk about the national scene. Lots of me and Stan today. We've decided to do that with our full program of 2 hours, so we'll get the analysis of Stan Weber and whatever.
Big 12, national.
Whatever little tidbits I bring to the table as well, right here on College Football Game Day on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It is our pleasure to be joined by Chris Kleiman, the head coach of the Kansas State Wildcats. And it doesn't get much better than to hit the first bye week with two easy victories under your belt. Coaches never think they're easy, but to the fans they were. And then a road victory against an SEC opponent. That'll put a smile on your face as you take a little time off. Well, we think it's time off, but a bye week really isn't time off. But great start for you, Coach. Congratulations.
I appreciate it. Yeah, guys are playing well and believing that we have a chance to be successful every Saturday. And the biggest thing is we know how much improvement we need to make. And the guys know that, coaches know that. And obviously we need to take advantage of the off week to make sure that we get our bodies healthy and minds fresh. But we got a long ways to go.
Coach, we enjoyed the victory. Thanks so much for putting that out there on the field. And I keep thinking in my mind, it's just got to be another day at the office for you. You've been around big games. You've been around college football. You've been around 20-year-old student-athletes. And it just a game is a game. But is there any difference in being the head coach at Kansas State University versus North Dakota State when you're going through the processes and the game weeks and the game action?
Well, no, I try not to think of it that way. Obviously, there is. I mean, there's no question there is. But you know, when you get to a game environment and it kicks off at whatever time, boy, it's just a football game. And I'd take that all the way back to my days when I was at Division III Loras College. To every kid, it's the biggest game in the world, and that's the way you got to treat it. It's just it's an opportunity to compete, and I don't get caught up in where I'm at. I'm a be where your feet are guy, the big thing that we're trying to do here is just continuing to try to learn more and more about our team. And I found out an awful lot of things last Saturday about the resolve and about the heart and character of these guys that didn't quit, even when it looked pretty bleak there as a start the fourth quarter.
You know, so far in this show this year, we have I've learned two new phrases. One of them was, I don't cut anybody else's grass, and now I've got to be where your feet are. So I'm getting a whole new lexicon. I thought I was a pretty, verbal person, good verbiosity.
I thought you were going to say an old guy who's heard a lot.
but those are good ones. I wanted to ask you, we talked about the differences, and you said naturally there are, but you try to treat game week and practice and things like that the same. Are the athletes different? You mentioned and their mindset and their attitudes. You mentioned Loras College, Division III, and then you're at a powerhouse in FCS, and now you're in a Power Five conference. Do the athletes, is the approach to them any different? Are athletes at a lower level maybe more motivated? Do they have a chip on their shoulder? Does that change as you rise up the ranks, per se?
You hope not. You hope everybody's as hungry. Whatever level you're playing at, because your opportunities are so small in this game. You know, you get at the Division III level, you got 10 opportunities a year. At FCS, you had 11, and if you made the playoffs, you were fortunate enough to get multiple ones. And here you get 12 and potential for a bowl game and playoffs and stuff. But, you know, that's the thing that I try to impress upon to the young guys that are playing this game. You only get so many opportunities, and you practice all year round, in essence. You know, you get a little time off, but you're working out, and you get so few of opportunities. Don't waste any opportunities you have because you're never getting those back. And I'm fortunate. We have a great bunch of seniors that are relishing every opportunity they have. And the last chance for those guys to be on the road in a non-conference game, and it's a Power 5, and it's an SEC, and those guys had a chip on their shoulder. Absolutely, those seniors did. And I was excited because the leadership that we have on this team, no different than some of the other teams I've had, that when it's loaded with seniors and loaded with fifth-year guys that have been through the ups and downs and good and bad, they relish those opportunities and make sure guys are ready to play.
You mentioned practice, and we're doing a little bit of compare and contrast here, I guess. The one I want to know about is your team is known for the physicality. Let's just start and keep it simple on offense. First of all, I know you're a guy who grew up on the defensive side and an expert over there, but your teams have been so physical. It's been true at North Dakota State, and it's obvious that it's true here at K-State. And I just keep thinking about how practice has changed so dramatically, maybe even from 5 years ago, with the physicality and the amount of times you're in pads and all of that. How does that get coached now? How big a challenge is it? What is it like to be physical up front with the practices we have nowadays?
Well, it is difficult, but in the same respect, you are allowed, you know, a certain amount of days that you are in pads, whether it's in fall camp or whether it's during the season. And I think the big thing is to take advantage of those days, that it is a physical day, and the guys know it's going to be a physical day. You can still have a physical day and keep your head out of the game, and that's what I think we do a great job of teaching here. It still comes down to moving your feet and lowering your hips and striking people with your hands and stuff. And, you know, I think that's kind of a lost art a little bit on the offensive side of the game, with it being such a up-tempo, fast-paced, position blocking with your O-line game, that it's neat because we have an awful lot of NFL scouts that come, whether it was our practice at North Dakota State or practice at Kansas State, and they so appreciate watching, you know, O-linemen with in a three-point stance, tight end in a three-point stance, a fullback. And, you know, I know you guys are in Chiefs land, in Chiefs world like we all are, but New England beat Kansas City in I-back set last year in the AFC Championship game. And it still comes down to being more physical, and that's something that we're going to pride ourselves upon.
One of the hallmarks of any good team is the fact that they, quote-unquote, know how to win, or, you know, have a feeling that they are going to win. I don't know if there is any better example than your team last week. You came out and you just played great, and you appeared to be the better team, but as the game went on, the home team, Mississippi State, seemed to take over the game and have control of it physically, maybe as much emotionally and from a momentum standpoint. But you, despite mistakes made in the game, were able to shrug that off and turn that into another dominant quarter, the fourth quarter. Is that maybe the first example you're seeing of your new guys, knowing how to win?
Well, knowing how to win and finishing is all about belief and believing you can win and believing you're going to finish. And that's something that I did see last Saturday. Two things happened. One, we got off to a terrific start, and there was great belief that, you know, we belong here, we're a better team, and we're up 10-0. And had we not muffed the one punt, we maybe go in 17-0 and we're talking a different game. Maybe we win 31-10 or something. But we did. We made the mistake, and they capitalized on it. And we kind of lost the second quarter and lost the third quarter. But there was still that belief on the sideline that we're within striking distance and all we need to do is make a play. And I could hear the guys on the sideline talking about it. Hey, just need to make a play. Just need to make a play to get this thing flipped. Well, we make the play on the kickoff return to tie it up. And then really the fourth quarter, we owned the fourth quarter. I thought we'd move the football. We were able to get some stops on defense. We were kind of able to wear them down a little bit. And that's what you're – and it's a part of believing you're going to win. And that's finishing to me is everybody's talking about, hey, how do you finish better? Well, you believe you're going to finish. And our guys were in great belief the entire game that – we were going to find a way to win. But we talked about it on Monday of that week. We're going to have adversity. You got to weather the storm when adversity hits, and we're going to find a way to win the game in the fourth, and they believed it.
You know, coaches routinely will use crowd noise at practice to simulate what teams are going to see on the road. You didn't have your managers banging a bunch of cowbells, did you, during the course of the week?
Absolutely, we did. The crowd noise, and Al Serby went and got a bunch of cowbells, and we had some cowbells next to some speakers. And,
there you go.
It was, you know, and it was a really loud environment. I thought there was one time, I think, in the first half, Stan, that maybe we had a tackle jump. But other than that, we handled it exceptionally well, and it's a credit to the environment that we put them in during the week. You know, we did it Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Typically, sometimes we wait till Thursday, but we did it for three straight days, and I think our guys were ready for the environment and kind of immune to it as the game progressed.
You know, Danny, I think that Coach may have went ahead and contributed those cowbells over to the cattle over in the Ag College, so you might see more cattle walking around because that's not normally what we do. You know, Coach, as far as being prepared, I saw something very unique. Mississippi State did not put their shoulder pads on in warmups, and I thought they were hoping that we would be the team not used to the heat and humidity. I thought that was very telling. I go, wow, they have a different mindset about this, but doesn't take away from what you did. It was very interesting. I've not seen teams warm up without their shoulder pads before. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I had seen it, and when he came out and they weren't in their pads, I wasn't surprised. But it was interesting. You can flip the script the other way because all our guys were talking about it, and we're talking about how much tougher we were because we did put pads on.
Right.
So it's all a mindset and how you want to play that mind game. And our guys flipped the script and kind of were talking about how tough we were, that we had our pads on, we were ready to go, and we didn't need to have just our T-shirts on prior to pregame. And I think a lot of that stuff, it is what it is. And then it's between the white lines for the 60 minutes, and you've got to go play no matter what the elements are.
I was in line with the players. I think I was saying it in pregame. I'm surprised. It looks like the tougher team is the white-jerseyed boys over there. But there's so much, I believe, and people hear me talk about every year's a new year. Momentum is by playing well on the field. Coaches can have whatever sayings they want, but you need to prove it on the field. There's only 12 opportunities. It really matters how you play. So before the game, who cares what we thought? Now you have played the game, your team knows what they are, and even though you had the conversation a week ago before the game about adversity, what is the mindset you've seen from the players this week to have confirmation that you went down and out physical an SEC team? You got a lot ahead of you, a lot of work to do, but what's the mindset, Ben, that you'd had confirmation that, yeah, we were going to have adversity and we were going to fight through it positively?
Yeah, I guess to take it a step further, you know, about this year and last year, I'm more of this week to last week. Whatever you did last week has absolutely no bearing on what you're going to do the next week. You can take that from a positive or you can take it from a negative. You can play awful. And if you have a great week of preparation and you have good matchups, you have a chance to play really well that next Saturday. If you have a great week the previous Saturday, if you don't attack it every day, that doesn't mean you're going to have a great week this next week. And so our mindset this week was, yeah, we have an open week. We have a lot of great things that we're doing out on the field, but we have a lot of things in all three phases of the game that we have to improve upon. And this week I thought the guys did a great job of coming out each day and finding something that we needed to improve upon. We needed to be better on third down offense because we weren't really good last Saturday. Need to be better at tackling. Now, once again, you can't tackle that much in practice, but you can put them in positions and run through your correct leverage and things like that. And so you better take advantage of those opportunities where you have the practice time. And I know it's tough on an open week, but our guys have done a really good job of that. And it's easier. Make no bones about it. It's easier to have a good practice in an open week when coming off of a win.
You obviously, we've talked a lot about toughness and physicality for your teams, and clearly they've exhibited it. And we talked about practice habits as well. But you're coming to town to teach physical, tough football on the heels of a coach who probably had some of the most difficult practices in America. So how do you balance it not seeming a little bit easy for the guys, and, you know, not substitute teacher syndrome, but if they were running gassers all the time and now they don't have to all the time, for instance, how do you handle that? How do you make that transition and make it seem like it's not a little bit of a break?
Well, you kind of hit it on the head, the for instance part. I don't know what went on. It's not any of my business. I know it was successful because they won a ton of games here. and coach built the empire here that we are all able to have and enjoy because of the success they had. This is the way that the staff that I've been a part of, a number of us are here, part of what I was at North Dakota State when Coach Bull was there, who's now at Wyoming. This is what I believe in, what our staff believes in, of what you have to do on a daily basis to prepare yourself. And whether that means it's a hour and a half practice, it's a 2 hour and 20 minute practice, you're going to run during practice, you're going to run after practice, it's what you can sell and what the kids can believe into and latch onto is what's going to be successful. And I credit our seniors, I credit our leaders. We've got a bunch of great leaders that challenge each other. No matter what's in front of you today, go attack it. And that's kind of how I look at it. I'm not a big believer in what was. And, you know, once again, we had some good success at the previous school I was at. Doesn't mean we're going to have it here. We've got to continue to go to work.
We're talking to Chris Kleiman, head coach at K-State. And Coach already knows this, Danny, but I can tell you, the belief in Coach Kleiman and his staff is 100%, and it was in the first – it started right away, full belief in the first meeting. I have a little inside information because my youngest son, who turned 21 a couple days ago, he doesn't talk hardly at all, and he immediately said, I love this coach. I can't wait to play for him. And it's only built from there, Coach, so congratulations. You mentioned scouts earlier and people watching your practice. Well, if people haven't studied it, they need to know – about a couple of guys that played awful good quarterback for you at North Dakota State. Carson Wentz, obviously a superstar, and you had a recent one. It's an NFL player right now as well. I just look at Skylar Thompson, and I don't want to get ahead of myself. He's got 2 years. Let's take it day by day. But, Coach, you've seen NFL quarterbacks. I'm looking at Skylar Thompson, and he is starting to blossom to look like another one who could be an NFL quarterback. Just – your thoughts on Skylar Thompson and what we're seeing develop?
Well, I love his growth that he's made from spring through the summer, through fall camp, and leading us into early September. It's been phenomenal, the amount of steps and progress that he's made. It's confidence, and I think you can see that, how much confidence he's playing in. I think part of that is the belief in what we're doing and what Coach Mess and Coach Klein are calling and what myself believe in him. You know, going for it on fourth down is believing in your quarterback, and we all believe in him, and he's a tremendous leader. And the thing that I've been so impressed with Skylar is he makes everybody around him better. You know, not a lot of people knew a lot about Malik Knowles. Well, they're knowing about Malik Knowles. Malik's a really good football player, but Skylar's putting him in positions to be successful as well. And he's throwing it around. You know, whether it's Dalton, whether it's Landry, whether it's Joaquin, Phillip, our tight ends, everybody's kind of got a piece of the action, and he's keeping everybody engaged and doing a phenomenal job getting us ready to play every week.
Today you have a game day off. Do you watch a lot of football when days like this come about? Do you do a lot of work? Can you watch football as a fan, or are you always in analysis mode? What's it like for you on a Saturday?
Only OSU today.
When you're not playing, yeah. What's it like?
Well, I get the little kids time. You know, I've got two high schoolers, so I get a little family time with those guys. And I'll be locked in, though, tonight. I'll probably be fan, a little bit of coach, a little bit of everything, watching the game tonight with Oklahoma State and Texas, because that's a big opener for us. It's going to be a tough environment, and we've had some prep on them this week with our open week, but it'll be a big game for all of us to be watching.
Coach, we can't wait to watch that game, and we really appreciate you spending this time with us today.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me, guys.
Coach Chris Kleiman joining us here on College Football Game Day, right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to College Football Game Day right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Our thanks to Chris Kleiman. Very interesting conversation. More cowbro. I should have made a Christopher Walken reference during that because his famous T-shirts and such that he wants more cowbell from a
old skit on Saturday Night Live. So, and the Cowbells did not bother the Wildcats as they were winners last week down in Starkville. And let's talk a little bit Missouri Tigers right now as the Tigers get set for an important mid-afternoon game. I talked about the weather. It looks good in Lawrence, Kansas for the game against Kansas against West Virginia. The percentages for thunderstorms go down to the mid-20s during game day. However, that same system apparently will be going over to Columbia, and at kickoff time, it's about a 75% chance of a thunderstorm, so maybe we'll have a delay there, so folks driving over there.
Yeah, don't say that, Danny. You remember the rainstorm that they had in the other Columbia?
Oh,
South
yeah.
Carolina, when Mizzou was playing there?
Yeah, what was that? Wow. 5-hour delay or something like that?
Yeah, not
so,
fun.
So, Missouri needs to keep the momentum going that they have built in small increments since the real disaster, the only way I'll put it, against Wyoming. And
that was Danny speaking about disaster.
They do it against the South Carolina team that they haven't had much success against. South Carolina is not supposed to be that good a team this year, but their results would indicate that maybe they're a little bit better than some think, although they're 1-2. They lost a close game to North Carolina, then they lost Alabama and were in that game much of the way, and then, of course, they won an easier game. So they've played two really tough opponents, and both of them are really good football games. And
they've had a hard schedule.
They have had a hard schedule. They're playing a backup quarterback. But their offense has operated pretty well so far. So this game's kind of tough to read, I think.
It definitely is, because I think the history of matchups matter a lot. We'll talk about that when we talk about OSU and Texas a little bit later, a feature ball game today as well. But, you know, South Carolina has found a way to win the last three games against Missouri, and they definitely shouldn't have won, I think, two of those. I think Missouri was the better team, but just crazy stuff has happened. And so I think South Carolina has that edge. They have a belief that they can go and find a way against Missouri, and we never understand how these things work. Just like last night, I mentioned on Friday night, Utah has not won at USC since 1960. Well, who cares? USC is awful now. They used to be great. Utah wasn't in their conference. They didn't play that often. Nothing like that matters, and guess what? They lost again. So how will Missouri play today? That is a good question. How are they going to use Kelly Bryant, the quarterback? It's interesting how he's played so far. He had the fumble against Wyoming. That was a big turnaround play, because I believe Missouri had penetrated into Wyoming territory, already had a two-score lead, and all of a sudden he fumbles on a hit. Not necessarily his fault, not bad ball positioning, just happens. And they run it back for a touchdown, get a defensive touchdown, and then Missouri suddenly brings Wyoming back in the game and loses the game. But Kelly Bryant has not run very much, Danny.
Right
now. And I think he's a running threat. Now, they came from an offense with Drew Lock last year where he could run, but there's no need to put him in that position because he was such a great passer, and it was not his game. I think it is Kelly Bryant's game. So now it's conference time. Do you say we're going to unleash the quarterback? Clemson ran him as a quarterback. So it's very interesting to see what Kelly Bryant does today. I think South Carolina, you need to be a little careful. Don't sign off that they're a bad team. They're only 1-2. They got a backup quarterback because of their schedule. Now, will they be beat up by Alabama, or will they gain some confidence that they've been used to playing at a high level against a team like Alabama? We'll see today. I give Missouri, the Columbians from the state of Missouri, the advantage in this game. I would expect they're going to win, but I totally respect this could be close. The spread's almost 10 points, mm-hmm. So they look at it like Missouri is going to go out there. You know, one question is, how is the freshman quarterback going to play? And, Danny, it's worth noting, because a lot of times you just go to the stadium, have a lot of fun, look at your team, know a few things about the opponents, and have a big party. Why wouldn't you? But I do think it's worth noting that Ryan Helinski's a unique story, a kid from California that went across the country and was recruited by South Carolina and now ends up being the starting quarterback because their starter gets hurt, Jake Bentley. But don't forget that his brother was the starting quarterback at Washington State at the end of the season, 2017, and then in January of 2018 committed suicide. So that was a national college football story. His family has done a great job of being out there and trying to do something to help the cause about mental illness and the things that can happen and how big of challenges there are out there for all of us, and especially kids, you know, student-athletes and students 20 years old or so. So anyway, point is he's very athletic. He really wants to play to honor his brother. He seems like he's more mature than a lot of kids are. And so I do think he becomes a risk. I think for Missouri, he could up his game. He's a freshman, and they've been pretty careful with his throwing, but I think he's a higher-level player than you might think. So an interesting story. They've handled themselves so well because they've been on the national spotlight. His parents have done things on the football game day on television saying, you know, this is a very sad time in our lives, but we want other people to learn from it and not have it happen in their lives. So it's very courageous, and Ryan Helinski, great kid. Root for him, maybe not today, but wearing number 3 in honor of his brother, who was a Washington State player.
And just a note from another sport, Sam McDowell did a tremendous article with Danny Duffy regarding his struggles with mental illness. And if you haven't seen that, at the Star, KansasCity.com, very forthcoming talk about how Danny Duffy was bullied, was a loner, battled serious mental health issues, has been in therapy for a long, long time, something he doesn't really, you know, and athletes don't generally feel comfortable sharing this type of thing. But he, for the same reason, he said, if I can help one person out there who's going through the same kind of stuff that I dealt with. So it is very important. And I think that for people who have never experienced it or seen a loved one experience it, it's like a silent disease. I mean, completely. And it's hard to recognize. And nobody, you know, probably had much of an inkling that Ryan Helinski's brother was going through what he was.
No, it looked like he hit it big, and he became a starting quarterback at Washington State with Mike Leach. He'd done a nice job in a bowl game, and you know, less than a month later, unfortunately, he took his life. We sound like we're a Sunday morning show all of a sudden here rather than College Game Day on Saturday morning. It is Danny Klingsell, Stan Weber here on our 20th year, but last night a Football Life came out, just another footnote. Tony Gonzalez
right,
really opened up about being bullied as a kid and how many challenges he's had with his confidence, even though he seemed like a super confident guy.
And eventually
just
was.
Just remember right? that a lot of times people's outside demeanor mm-hmm. of I'm really confident doesn't tell you at all the story. We need to respect that there's a lot of other thoughts going in people's head. And I had not seen it yet, but I know it came out for the first time. They run them all the time. But it came out on the NFL Network last night, and that was one of the things that Tony Gonzalez talked about that was a little surprising compared to those who had followed his career and heard other things.
From a much less significant sports standpoint, confidence and keeping that confidence alive is a big part of Missouri's task today. No question about that, because having this home game, having a schedule that is really about as amenable as you can possibly get in the Southeast Conference, you don't have the carrot necessarily of bowl eligibility, and unless that changes over the next few weeks, which doesn't seem likely to me. So continuing to win and continuing to have that good feeling, Chris Kleiman talked about it, Stan, the fact that that should be a selling point for Barry Odom, and probably is, the fact that, you know, football's a tough game. You've talked about it many times. You love football maybe more than anybody I know, but you don't like football. You don't.
You just say maybe.
You're not much of a – well, some people out there probably say, I love football too, so, so I'll say maybe. But you only get limited opportunities to actually play the game. Football practice is not fun. You know, baseball practice is fun. Basketball practice is fun. I mean, there's a lot of just playing ball involved with it.
Right.
Football practice, there's a tremendous amount of drudgery, and the games are the thing. So that's why keeping your spirits up, keeping that confidence level up, is really on the line a little bit for Missouri in this game. They're supposed to win. They haven't been drawing great fans to their stadium so far, at least what they expect. And, you know, that can go away, too, if you don't continue to get the job done on Saturday.
Well, generically, looking at the other sports, you can go real quickly and say, if you're a Major League Baseball player and you strike out 3 times, you are bummed and your confidence is not high. But guess what? Tomorrow, you're playing.
Right.
Okay, let's get back into it. Basketball and college basketball, yeah, I got to wait 3 days.
Right.
This lingers on. That week lasts so long. There's so many media sessions, and everyone has their opinion. Football's great. It matters so much that it just wears on you. And Missouri lost to Wyoming. It was not good. I'm not going where you are about how awful it was, but it sure left them no room for losing now. They need to continue to win. I think today is the eraser. You get your eraser out, you hit your clear button on your computer, whatever you want to do, exit. You win this game, and you don't think about the Wyoming game anymore. You lose this game, Danny, suddenly you're thinking, we've lost twice already in a season where we didn't think we were going to lose at all. They got, coming up after this, they got Troy and Ole Miss, two more home games in a four-game home stretch. Troy, Ole Miss, at Vanderbilt, at Kentucky. You can win all those games. You should win all those games. You probably should have won all these games. You can't afford a loss. Confidence is big right now. And the Missouri fans are going to be the ones to attack the most because they really thought, listening to us, we baited everybody out there. Why isn't Missouri going to start 5-6-7-0?
No,
why
right.
aren't they?
Right.
And already Wyoming beat them. We can get back to good football today. Really interested to see how Missouri plays this out and what utilization of the quarterback they have, because Kelly Bryant wants to be an NFL quarterback, I think. I think he likes throwing the ball more. But the fact is, you got to go out and win. And I believe today will be competitive.
Just try to categorize Missouri as a football team. You know, when you view them right now, you don't say, well, they're a running team, or, boy, their defensive line's great, or, you know, their defensive secondary super. Or they seem to have good play across the board, but they're not a team where maybe you can identify a real strength. You know, the real key for today's game,
right.
Missouri
or
likes to ride
a,
that running
weakness.
Game, or they like to, you know, they love the spread to throw the ball around, or they sack the quarterback five times a game. I mean, you don't have any of that. So how would you categorize them as a team, and when they're playing well, what do they need to do?
And I would look at both ends of the spectrum. Sometimes you get defined by what your weaknesses are.
Right.
And I worried about Missouri's run defense. That was the thing after the Wyoming game.
Like, right.
What the heck? Long runs, but consistently giving up runs. And I do believe you said it well. I don't see Missouri as a team of a bunch of stars where you look and say, look at that killer wide receiver. Obviously, the running back's, you know, stronger maybe. And Kelly Bryant has a winning attitude. He came from Clemson. He might be special, but right now he's just a good quarterback in my mind until proven otherwise. And maybe it's adding the running game. But I thought you said it very well. Missouri's kind of good everywhere. And I thought about that weakness on defense against the run. I have erased that. I think they're going to be fine. So they're back to being what you described. That might be good enough to win a lot of games in the SEC, because in the SEC East, you got teams like Tennessee that aren't very good, and Kentucky's not very reliable. Now you got the Georgia of the world, and that becomes a hard game. But I'm not down on Missouri, but I think you described it very well. They don't have one thing to lean on. Last year was Drew Locke, and especially
right.
the deep ball throwing Drew Locke was lethal, as good as anybody in the country. This year, I think Missouri's going to be the favorite in almost every game, except for a game against Georgia, but it's going to be by a thin margin. And they don't have a lot of room for error because they can't look at killer defensive linemen to get sacks and turn the game back around. I think it needs to be more of a steady game, because when things go negative, how likely is Missouri going to be able to bounce back? You could argue, a Mizzou fan might say, we fought back very well against Wyoming. But to me, it happened a little bit late. So I think they need to stay, like when you're trying to get first downs and you're not a great lethal offensive team, you want to stay ahead of the chains. You want to make it second and medium, third and short. Missouri needs to do that on a scoreboard. Stay right there. Be ahead by a field goal. Be right in the middle of the game, and more than likely you're going to find a way to win these games. But it's going to be scary if they get 10 points behind or more and try to come back, because I don't know where they lean on. There's no part of the team that you just say that is the feature item, just like you said.
You're listening to College Football Game Day on Sports Radio 810 WHB Kansas City. One more note on this game. SEC Network alternate. What the hell? How do you?
That's
do you,
a curveball right there.
Do you know how to get that? Some
yes,
anyone?
Well, it depends.
Bueller,
hey, there's a million sources, but usually if you go to your SEC Network channel, one channel away from it is kind of a blank slate, and usually when you flip to it, it just shows you an SEC logo and it's kind of floating with all 14 teams. That's the alternative. So,
all right. Well, I know I have the SEC Network not in HD, but I do have it.
I have it on.
And I don't have the ACC
Network. I have it on
cable,
for instance. And shout out to Spectrum, okay, to keep it simple. 384 is the SEC channel, 385 is the alternative.
Okay.
But on DirecTV, 611 is the SEC channel. And I'm not sure if 612 is the alternative. You might have to go a little ways away from there. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, I'm Consolidated Communications.
You know, nowadays no one remembers any numbers.
I'll have to do a little work.
I can remember all the numbers of the TV on the different systems, Danny. That's, you see where my interest might be?
I think so.
And
yeah.
you don't ever say always, never. I'm so impressed with you. You didn't say I love football more than anybody. You left it a little room in there.
Yeah, there's.
But
this,
you did say
there's
of people
probably
you
some
know.
Kind of
you
football
said of people you know.
Out there.
No, you said of people you know.
Right.
So anyway,
that's true.
I remember these numbers crazy. But I do know on Spectrum, you're going to be in good shape on 385 because that's SEC alternative.
There you go. Thank you, Stan Weber. That doesn't help me because I'm not Spectrum. Am I Spectrum? I can't even remember now. Consolidated has changed so many times that I don't know whether it's Spectrum or not. Anyway, I'll find it.
It won't be easy to find.
I'll find it. I'll do it. It'll happen. And it'll happen for you as far
as a radio broadcaster. Our ratings are going up, Danny. Football,
that's a good point.
No, football's on fire. But like KU today, people that just can't sort it out. It's not about the money necessarily. It's just getting it up on whatever they want
right, or
to
maybe,
watch the game.
Or
and
maybe you're not
going to
be.
In time. You just heard about it right now.
Or maybe you're not going to be locked and loaded on your couch for 4 hours.
Right.
And, you know, you're going to be out and about, and you're saying, well, it's not really worth it for me to get this service for a game. I might watch half of it. There's a lot of things involved. And, of course, you'll be able to hear that game, Kansas and West Virginia, right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, where you'll get a little handicapping advice coming up next. And then Stan and I will delve into the SEC, the Big 12. Welcome back to College Football Game Day on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Big day of college football ahead. Big edition of College Football Game Day. And it's always big when we bring aboard Kevin Todd from the sportsbrokers.com. 888-320-7517 is the phone number. He's got some college football advice for you and some advice on how to get even more advice. Welcome to the show, Kevin.
Hey, Danny. How you doing? I just want to let all your listeners know that I got two college football games going on this weekend as my best bets. My best bets this year, folks, are 5-1 against the spread. I want to give you this information for free. All you have to do is dial 888-320-7517. That's 888-320-7510. You get my two college best bets here on Saturday morning, folks. You go to my website, you join my website, thesportsbrokers.com.
That's 888-320-7517 is the number. And, of course, you can get those big plays of the day, but also you're willing and nice enough to give us some information on a couple of games for free.
Yeah, well, I'm going to give you the first game right down in Missouri over there. Missouri is taking on South Carolina at home. We watched South Carolina play, you know, tough against Alabama. They got lucky with a late touchdown to cover. But let me tell you right now, the coach from Missouri, Barry Odom, he is winless against this South Carolina team. So I went back and I looked a little deeper. You know, the Gamecocks are 4-0 against the spread their last four games. They're also 7-1 against the spread their last eight games after allowing more than 40 points in their previous games. They're 5-1 against the spread versus teams with a winning record. The bad here for Missouri, they're 2-5 against the spread their last seven games, and they're also 4-10 against the spread on games allowing less than 170 passing yards in their previous game. I like South Carolina here. The line opened up at 9.5. It's pretty much settling about 9, 9.5, depending where you play. I'm going to take the points here. I think South Carolina keeps it close, but I think Missouri gets their first win against South Carolina for Coach Barry Odom.
Got a big one in the Big Ten to take a gander at, too.
Yeah, I do. But like I said before, folks, listen, I got my two best bets going on right now. I'm 5-1 in college football in best bets. I know the season's early, but I'm telling you, I got two games, in my opinion, that are not going to lose. You dial 888-320-7517. That's 888-320-7517. You go to my website. You join my website, thesportsbrokers.com. For my last play, I'm looking at Michigan at Wisconsin. I like this game here for Wisconsin. Right now the line's 3, 3.5, depending when you play. You know, And I went back and I looked there, Danny. Michigan hasn't won in Wisconsin since 2001. They should have lost to Army. They could have lost their first game as well. This Wisconsin team, they're like clicking on all cylinders. I love the running back there for Wisconsin. I believe he's got a shot to win the Heisman Trophy. Plus the fact that Michigan is 1-6 against the spread their last seven road games. And when Wisconsin has a bye and then plays home the previous week, the last 13 times that's happened, Danny, they're 10-3 against the spread. I like Wisconsin here with revenge, losing last year 38-13 as a 9-point dog in Michigan. Give me Wisconsin here, lay the 3, 3.5. I like them to win this game easy. That's the winner for this weekend. But more important, folks, I'm telling you, 888-320-7517. Take down this number, 888-320-7517. I'm telling you, 2-0, my best bets, college football. I'm 5-1 in this early season in best bets. I'm going 2-0 this weekend, and it's yours free.
To get those best bets and get all your great information, go to Kevin Todd, the man we're speaking with right now at thesportsbrokers.com, 888-320-7517. Talk to you next week, Kevin.
Thanks, Danny. Have a good day.
And we'll continue with more coming up on College Football Game Day right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to College Football Game Day right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's go around our two conferences that we are most involved with here in this area, and then we'll do national college football in the last segment today. Danny Klinkscale, Stan Weber. Make sure and visit me often at DannyKlinkscale.com and the Reasonably Irreverent podcast. Always consistent and continually updating information. Actually, yesterday's Kansas City profile had a real football bent. Jan Stenerud was the person I talked to. And very interesting.
It's hard to believe that when you meet these old NFL stars that won Super Bowls and Hall of Famers, and I go, yeah, I know Jan. I mean, when I walk up, he says, hi, Stan. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Really? I was a kid and watched you. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Did you know that he still holds one record? He attempted a 113-yard field goal. It was
at Montana State?
Yeah, it was an extremely windy day. The punter was having all kinds of trouble, and they were backed up to their, 5-yard line, and the coach said, field goal team!
It used to not get the ball where the ball was snapped or kicked.
Right.
It was the ball rolled to. He was like the punter.
Yeah, he was basically it was just a punt, but it goes down in the books as a 113-yard field goal attempt from somebody who, till his junior year of college, never kicked a football.
He was a skier.
He was a ski jumper.
Oh, he's a jumper.
He was a ski jumper. He came to Montana State on a full ski jumping scholarship, full ride, and he's from Norway. A very fascinating story. Nice man.
I know. Tell the story about how they discovered him out on the field and all that stuff.
Yeah,
the basketball
coach saw him out the window and told the football coach, "You got a guy who can really kick the ball."
And in the old days, these guys are curmudgeons, right? And the football coach is like, "No, I'm not going to waste my time." And the basketball coach has to grab him and yank him. Go down there and see this kid.
Right, exactly. And just a heads up, if anyone is a friend of Mike Kelly, the Missouri football announcer, they might want to point out to him that he still points out whenever anybody goes out for a kick that the kicker is kicking soccer style. And I'm like, Mike, nobody kicks straight on anymore, so you don't have to point that out. You just would, if somebody actually went out there and went all Mike Mosley and was going to kick it straight away with a square toe, that's when you say it. But saying somebody's kicking soccer style has no resonation, but he still says it, which is
Jan Stenerud against George Blanda. George Blanda, the old quarterback kicker for the Raiders.
That's right.
When the Raiders and Chiefs used to be a very even rivalry before the Chiefs started stomping them.
I think Mark Mosley, the Redskins, I think he was the most valuable player in the league that one year because he kicked just a pile of field goals, and he was the last.
That's
significant.
When Joe Theismann, John Riggins.
Yeah, he was the last significant straight-on kicker, I do believe, as a matter of fact, and he was the only one then at that
point in time, I believe, and he was a very good kicker. Let's talk college football. Let's get back to college football after that little side journey. Iowa State plays against Louisiana Monroe. This would be a game that had zero interest ordinarily, but Iowa State just needs to win a game. I mean, they lost to Iowa again, and they've only played two games.
Because they could have lost to Northern
and they
Iowa
almost
if
lost
Purdy
to
wouldn't have got a fumble in overtime that he shouldn't have got to. The ball was fumbled at the two. He had handed it off, and he was back at the seven and somehow ran and dove and got the ball before anybody who was near the ball got it. Saved the day. They beat Northern Iowa in overtime.
So they just need to win. We talk about winning and losing, how significant it is in building momentum, feeling, especially for a team that was pretty highly thought of before the year. Just need to go out and take care of business today against Monroe, and no drama. Go out and kick their ass, basically.
Yep. Be solid. Be good. Be the better team. Get back to what you are, which is really more of a dominating defensive team. That's the 11 o'clock game in the Big 12.
TCU plays against SMU. SMU hasn't lost a game yet. Quality of opposition, obviously not the best. TCU's won both of their games. They're ranked now. What do you think of their team?
Man, that defense is good. They throttled Purdue, who is known as an offensive team. They shut them down, and they also leaned on their running game. They're still sorting out the quarterback situation. We know Alex Delton went down there, a K-State graduate transfer to TCU. They also have a four- or five-star freshman that they're using. The quarterback situation is probably not perfect, but you know what? They leaned on the running game and gashed Purdue. But it's more about the defense. This is an interesting rivalry because back when the Southwestern Conference was there, it was really about Texas A&M, and Arkansas. Danny, and you didn't hear about the other schools? Man, there was a heated rivalry in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, the Metroplex. SMU, fancy pants SMU, right in the rich area of Dallas, against the kind of western side, the agricultural TCU in Fort Worth. Well, now TCU's a Big 12 team. They're the better team. But SMU is actually dangerous. They have a quarterback who started at Texas who now is starting at SMU. And this game's worth noting, Danny, because in this day and age where you throw out different uniforms, do you realize that SMU today, if you get a chance to watch this game, you have to look closely when they get a close-up. But in the front of the jersey, SMU is going to have script Dallas written in. And on their helmet, it's going to be like a triple D design with a red Mustang over it, like blue triple D. But that Dallas on there is actually honoring Lamar Hunt, the Chiefs owner and the originator of the AFL. He was an SMU grad, and it's their way of honoring him. But I'm not sure how the connection with the script Dallas is about Lamar Hunt, but it's absolutely in honor of Lamar Hunt.
And I think it's probably also trying to brand themselves as the college football team of Dallas, and having that be a significant talking point for them. TCU is only an 8.5-point favorite in this game, so could be an interesting game, although TCU
we're still
is on
trying
the home field.
The big theme is we're trying to teams are trying to define themselves in a Big 12 because I think it's like the pros. I think just everybody should be near 500 in conference play except for Oklahoma and maybe Texas. But like the NFL, every game is at risk. If you don't play well, you're going to lose, and I think that's very unique. How good is TCU? They may be second best in the conference, or they also might be seventh place in the conference. And I can say that about a lot. How about Iowa State? They were commonly thought of as, oh, no doubt about it, third best team. Danny, they could end up being the seventh or eighth best team in the Big 12. We don't know where these teams are going to sort out. And today, hopefully, we'll learn a little bit more about these teams.
Well, the 11th place team in the Big 12 is Rice because they're playing Big 12 teams every week, getting their heads kicked in and making some nice money. Now, today they play at home, actually, against Baylor, and they are 26-point underdogs. But Baylor, another team, we're trying to wrap our hands around how good are they. Are they making the next step under Matt Rhule, who is highly respected, but the results haven't quite been there yet. This is just the type of game you go out, you continue to assert the fact that your program is on the come.
Yeah, because that one-win team was a disaster a couple years ago. I mean, the fact that he came in from Temple, tried to run a different style of offense, and it didn't work, but he finally reverted back. But just run the program with some class that wasn't there behind the scenes with Art Briles. He changed the dynamics, and the fans are jaw-dropping, like, I don't know if I like this change in dynamics. This classiness that we're showing is not working on the field. We only won one game. Well, then they became one of the most improved teams in college football, going from one win to a much better record last year. And the question is, are they back? Are they now doing it the Matt Rhule way? And I, the same statement I made about an Iowa State, a TCU, a K-State, is also true with these guys at Baylor. They may be as good as the third-best team in a conference. We still need to see. But I know Rice isn't having any fun because you want to talk about the school of Houston? The Houston Q Cougars are getting the publicity. Rice is in an old giant stadium.
Yeah, really big. Played a Super Bowl there.
Dolphins beat the Minnesota Vikings, I believe.
I think it's 80,000 seats.
I mean, it is giant, and they don't show up.
It's like the Yale Bowl.
Yeah, it's not that big a school.
Right.
It's kind of depressing when you go in there. K-State played a game there, and I've been there. And, you know, the Rice fans come out in numbers, which means 40,000, you know, 35. And then the opponent adds 10, and it looks empty. You just look around and go, wow, and it's just so old.
Right.
So there's not a lot of momentum with Rice football right now.
No, absolutely
not. So Baylor
not.
Should have an easy time of it.
The keynote game is Oklahoma State and Texas. Oklahoma State, a very underappreciated program in my mind, and no expectations really this year coming in. They've won their first three games. Now they get the test at Texas. Texas, just a touchdown favorite. Oklahoma State, the next opponent for Kansas State, so a lot of cachet as far as that is concerned. This is the big ABC game, and does Oklahoma State, do they go toe-to-toe with Texas today?
Yeah, absolutely. There's no reason why they shouldn't. They talk about these weird things. We said South Carolina against Mizzou, how crazy that is. Do you realize that Oklahoma State's won the last five times they've played in Austin?
Wow. That's something.
Yeah, and then they've won three or four straight against Texas everywhere. So it's just one of those weird things that Oklahoma State doesn't mind matching up. Mike Gundy is such a solid coach, kind of like Gary Patterson. You know what you're going to get. His team, if they struggle, they kind of own it, continue to fight, and go to a bowl game. And when things go their way, they go right up to the top of the conference. One of the big questions for OSU is a freshman quarterback. How good is he, man? He can run and throw, but can he do it down after down? Hubbard is a running back that leads the nation in rushing. The wide receiver is considered the best wide receiver in the country. OSU loves to score points, and we'll see how good the defense is. But, yeah, I expect this to be a very good game. And, you know, A equals B, B equals C, the old, oh, that means A equals C. I look at the K-State situation, and I go, it really doesn't matter what happens tonight, Danny. It will not change my mind dramatically. I say this, K-State, Oklahoma State is going to be a close game. If OSU beats Texas or is right there, then you start saying, well, if OSU is Texas and K-State is OSU, are you really saying K-State's Texas? In a weird way, I am. I don't think anybody on K-State's football team is intimidated by playing Texas head-to-head, and yet they have the capability to rise to a level and beat Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. We talked about our studio audience. I brought my son Stanton. You know, he came when he was 5 years old, and he's still watching us now, Danny. He and I were talking about this. When Texas beat Georgia, you're going, well, that's not outside of their range. Yet I don't think Iowa State, Oklahoma State, K-State, they can compete head-to-head with Texas as well. It's get ready for the NFL version of the Big 12, and tonight it starts. I don't think this is a defining game. I think it might be for Texas, but not for OSU.
I was going to say, this is the kind of game that Texas has tripped over the last few years as they're trying to reassert themselves as a national power. Tom Herman's going to start to hear it if he doesn't win, period.
It's well said, because when we look at the national programming right now, you get to say Alabama and Georgia. It used to be Alabama and LSU. You know, it's Alabama and somebody. And when you go to the Big 12, you're supposed to say Oklahoma and Texas. Well, the last 5 years, we just say Oklahoma.
Right.
But Texas thinks we should be in that statement. You don't lose to OSU early in a season at home and be thought of as a national team. So a lot at stake for the Longhorns.
SEC games, other than the ones that we'll highlight nationally. Actually, I'll probably just do them all because I don't think there's anyone that really has a head-to-head aspect to it anyway. Southern Miss goes to Alabama and takes a payday and takes a beating, 38-point underdogs. LSU at Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt, over the last 12 years or so, has gotten a little better as a program, but they never just can quite get over the hump.
They were better when James Franklin was a coach, but he's at Penn State now.
Yeah, and he's doing a good job at Penn State, and it seems like now maybe Vanderbilt has taken a step back again, and this is, you know, maybe the type of game where they rise up a little bit and give him a fight. through the years, though, recently, even when they've been better, Vanderbilt's issue has been they never score a lot.
In modern football, that doesn't play well.
Right.
And you can't lean on your defense all the time and be successful. The most intriguing thing about today's game, Danny, is a couple little trivia points. Because LSU's better. Yeah. LSU will have a ton of fans there. They're going to have fun in Nashville. The road teams love going to Nashville.
It's almost not a home game for Vanderbilt a lot of times.
Nashville's become such a hot spot to go party. People talk about Vegas, but there are certain people that love Vegas, and there's another crew that goes, not for me. I think everybody says, I want to go have fun downtown in Nashville. And you can walk to the stadium from there.
Yep,
over
right
to
across
Vanderbilt.
The river. Yep.
So Vanderbilt brings their fans, not too many, and then the other team packs them in. Interesting, Vanderbilt's going to wear light-colored, almost gray uniforms, almost a military type of look, which means LSU's going to wear dark jerseys. Okay, LSU rarely ever does that because at home they're one of the few teams.
Yeah.
They wear white at home when they go on the road. Obviously, they wear white all the time on the road. And then they have one game, the disrespect game, I call it, when they play an FCS opponent where they bring out purple jerseys. They'll bring out the purple at home, and they always play really bad. You know, they should blow out Furman, and it's, 31-20 or something. So last week, LSU brought out the purples, but they went a step further and wore white helmets instead of gold. So they're white helmets, purple jerseys, white pants. They wore them last week, which is so rare to see a combination like that once a year for LSU. Do you realize they're going with them again today? I bet you have to go back forever to say, when was the last time LSU wore purple jerseys two straight weeks? And with white helmets, probably never. They're going to wear them here. Will they throw a dud out against Vanderbilt? But the SEC level of football is only good, Danny. There's not a lot of great teams. We can talk about Alabama and Georgia, but I'm telling you, Florida is not the real deal. And Tennessee, not good at all. South Carolina, okay. I mean, this is not the dominant SEC that everyone wants to talk about.
Regarding the uniforms, I figured I'd make you happy with this reference. This is what LSU does is akin to when the Cowboys started wearing blue uniforms at home, and they lost a lot by their standards. And that's why they always wear white now, basically at home, because they lost a few games wearing the blue.
Well, the big one they lost is Super Bowl V against the Colts.
Right.
Okay, in blue.
Right.
That stunk.
That was
and they do not want to wear them anymore.
That game was a disaster. Don't ever watch that. If
Your
eyes will bleed, the Blunder Bowl. Let's talk Tennessee and Florida. Florida is ranked ninth, but you don't think that's legit.
No, they should have lost against Kentucky, and they lost a quarterback, which wasn't a good thing. But
he was riding around on a scooter today.
I think Florida is susceptible to getting after who's thought of as a big name. Probably the only one that's more likely is Michigan because, Michigan's got the name, and we want to think Michigan's great, but we've talked about it earlier in the show that they really don't upset anybody, even against the line. Jim Harbaugh's never won 0-6 when his team was the underdog. That's crazy.
Right.
So I think that you'd have to put Michigan up there as probably the biggest name that you could go compete with if your team was going to play. If it was Missouri at Michigan, you go, hey, you got a chance. Missouri against Florida, you got a big chance. So, no, I'm not a big believer in Florida, so much so that you know what the national pundits have been saying last night and today as I heard them talk about it? Ooh, watch out for Tennessee. They may get after it today.
And they're 1-2.
And you know how bad Tennessee is right now?
Yeah, they're not good. But they're less than a 2-touchdown underdog.
No, I agree with it. I think, and I'm not trying to bash their backup quarterback, but just the whole Florida team is not a dominant football team. And Georgia should win the SEC East, but I don't think Missouri's out of the running to be in second place. Don't hand it to Florida at all. Not in my mind.
California is a ranked team as they go to Ole Miss. That's an interesting game, and Ole Miss a 2.5-point favorite in that game.
Now, that is a fun intersectional
game. Yeah.
Because Cal beat Washington.
Right.
So what is Cal? I think
just to see a number next to Cal's name is it's almost jarring.
And their defense is good. Cal's defense is good, Danny.
Right.
But they're going to the SEC country, the humidity, an intersectional game that you just don't know what's going to happen. This is one of the 11 o'clock games that because I don't have to do a K-State game today, I'm going to be able to take in more football than ever, try to prove to Danny that I really do love football as much as anybody in the world. I want to watch this game. I cannot wait. A Pac-12 school that I think can go on the road. And Ole Miss is not dominant at all. They're not even the best team in their own state.
Two ranked teams go at it, Auburn at Texas A&M. How good are these teams?
I think
just below great.
They're not great at all. They don't test great at all. Auburn got very lucky to win that neutral site game in Dallas against Oregon. It just kind of bashed. Here we go again in a Pac-12. That's what that was about. I think Texas A&M is better. I think A&M will win. Auburn's trying to find themselves. I don't think they're that dangerous. A&M's not good enough to compete with the Alabamas, but there's a niche in there where they are a good SEC team and not a great team. Does that make sense? I mean,
yes.
a bright line between the two, and I think Auburn's a little less than that. I think Auburn is just kind of in the middle of the pack. So I think A&M will win the game today.
Kentucky at Mississippi State, these are two teams that are trying to prove themselves a little bit. Kentucky, that slow rise they've made to respectability, but are they hitting a glass ceiling of sorts? Mississippi's a touchdown favorite in this. Mississippi State's a touchdown favorite in this game. They've got to shake off the fact that they were handled by K-State. If K-State hadn't made a bunch of mistakes, they just handed opportunities to Mississippi State. They scored all 24 of their points after K-State mistakes. They might have got throttled in that game, and so they got to bounce back.
Season-defining for these two teams.
Right.
I think. Mississippi State cannot handle a second loss in a row at home. Their fans are kind of already not on board, losing to a school and from the state of Kansas, like, what's going on? We're better than this. Last year they had a dominant defense, first-round draft choices. And the guy they're missing is Fitzgerald, the quarterback from last year, the Colin Klein lookalike, the tall number seven. He's a winner, Danny. And they don't have him right now. And the starting quarterback is beat up some. He brought the backup in last week. Are they going to stick with him? Mississippi State-Kentucky is a dead-even game. But neither team has enough confidence to lose this game and bounce back and say we're fine the rest of the year. Kentucky should have beat Florida. And if they would have won, they say, watch out for us. We need to be thought of as an upper-level East team. Get Tennessee out of here. Talk about Kentucky. Well, they lost. They blew the game against Florida even after the backup quarterback came in. And it's kind of one of those, we're Florida, you're Kentucky. Basketball season's not too far away. Well, Mark Stoops' team is better than that. So today, it's all about the loser. The loser's in trouble.
Right.
And may be barely bowl eligible. I mean, that's how much of a punch in the mouth it's going to be. Neither of these groups of players thought they would be in trouble after today. And the loser is in trouble.
And the biggest game of the day nationally is one that does include an SEC team. So we'll talk about that as part of our national wave next, including Notre Dame at Georgia. As we get to see whether somebody else can kind of crack that little small group of teams that seem to be dominating.
Or will Georgia be Danny's third team after today? That's the question.
Yeah, I think they will be.
He already said it's going to be Alabama and Clemson in the Final Four college football playoff, and who's the third?
Well, it seems to me like this game, and to I'll reference it. Seren Petro talked about this on several occasions this week, and the fact that this is the kind of game that shows whether college football is too much not dominated right now by two, three, or four programs, and that nobody else really has a chance to make the playoffs on an annual basis. That part of our national look coming up next. Welcome back to College Football Game Day on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's head down the stretch with a look at the ranked teams' games that we haven't covered already in our two conferences. And we mentioned Alabama, of course, and the SEC teams there. Game coming up right away is number 11 Michigan against Wisconsin. We've touched on this game a couple of times. It'll be at Camp Randall, Wisconsin. I talked to you about this off the air, Stan. I don't know if everybody, well, probably people in Big Ten country don't agree with this, but there's something eminently likable about Wisconsin sports programs. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just to me, but be it basketball or football, I don't think I ever root against Wisconsin. I basically never, and I certainly want them to win today against Michigan. They're a solid program. They run the football. The fans get excited. They're the ones who started Jump Around, I believe.
Oh, I love Jump Around at the end of the third quarter.
Right. But, so they started that.
I think, Danny, if they agreed with you, and Nebraska fans, I know you do not agree with them. If you did, it's almost that they do things at a quality level. It seems like at a first-class level, and we're not so close to their city to know why we shouldn't like them.
Right.
But they don't ever threaten, like, oh, they're going to get away from us and be dominant. I mean, does any KU basketball fan worry about, oh, Wisconsin's so good this year? Even though they can be ranked in the top 10, you don't ever think they're going to win a national championship or beat us in the Elite Eight. And in the same way in football, no matter how good they are, ranked, what, 13th in the country or something like that right now, I don't at all think, oh, watch out for Wisconsin. They might win a national championship. So they're more lovable because they're good, but not great.
Right, and they don't have they don't have the Michigan helmet on. They're not considered. You know, they've been good for a long time now through multiple coaches.
Barry Alvarez started us all, and right. He has been away from the sideline as a coach a long time.
Right, and they've gone through four coaches now, I think, since Barry Alvarez, and they all have. And maybe that's the
teams
other.
Look the
maybe
same.
Maybe that's the other part of it is that it appears that they are good at football without making the compromises. One of the reasons they lose their coaches is they don't pay them. And so what it seems like, if you're looking at it from the outside, is, well, that's a good academic school. They're not going to sell out and just pay their coaches $6 million a year just because that's what everybody else does. Maybe that's a part of that aspect as well. Ohio State plays at home against Miami. There's another payday game there.
Miami, Ohio.
Yes, Miami, Ohio.
Be careful, because some people may think it's the U.
Probably wouldn't. The U wouldn't matter either in that particular case.
Yeah.
UCF did it again. They had a reasonably quality opponent last week in Stanford.
Right here.
In Stanford, and they still keep on winning games. And they will go to Pittsburgh today. And UCF, the University of Central Florida, at Pittsburgh, 11-point favorite.
It's amazing.
If you, and 10 years ago, you said something like that, you'd be like, what? Come on.
Pittsburgh lost by 7 to Penn State on the road last week.
Right.
So this is not a joke, Pittsburgh team. UCF ran Stanford off the field. Stanford has not been beaten like that in, I don't know when the last time. I'll look over here at Stanton because he studied Stanford a lot as a broadcaster a few years ago. Stanford's been a solid program. They may not be awesome, but they do a great job of down after down, week after week, playing at a high level, and they got ripped. So is Central Florida, do they really have a chance to be considered in the elite? I mean, it's been pretty easy for me to say, oh, they haven't quite done it, even though they beat Auburn in a bowl game and those kind of things. It's pretty easy for me to say, UCF, no, they shouldn't be in the college football playoff. But I'm telling you what, Danny, Josh Heupel has been able to continue things there. They're playing at a high level, and to rip Stanford the way they did, if they go out and beat Pittsburgh today by 20 on the road, we need to take a new look, because the teams that are at the top, other than Alabama and Clemson, aren't that elite out of the league with the others. I mean, that was our theme in week one. Doesn't matter what the name of your team is, they're actually closer to playing at a high level. So big game for Central Florida.
Big game for the defending national champions of college football. Well, they declared themselves that anyway. So,
with their school,
I think they hacked.
If their students
they raised
all bought
the banner.
If their students all bought a jersey or a shirt or two, it would buy. Their university's giant.
It's huge. It's like at like 40,000
students. It's in Orlando,
and
it's giant.
Right. It's really big. Washington plays at BYU. Two quality football programs that have had their moments this year, and that's just a good, solid football game. I mean, that's a game if you just like college football. And you're like, these are two reasonably evenly matched teams. Washington under a touchdown favorite on the road at BYU. BYU coming off a big victory as well. So just a good football game. A good football game to watch if you are just a fan of the game and the other 2:30 games don't intrigue you.
Yeah, how about BYU? I mean, it may not last all year because other teams are going to get into their conference schedule. But BYU, they show up on our Saturday schedule this way. This is our fourth week, Danny, into college football, right? Utah at Tennessee, USC, Washington.
It's like
and they're competitive
NFL
in all those
team.
Games.
Yeah, yes.
So, yeah, it's a big game, and it's a giant game for the Pac-12 because we started today talking about, if you didn't hear, Utah, who was the most likely team ranked number 10 to be a Pac-12 participant fighting for a college football playoff spot, lost at USC. I think it really diminishes the chance, and it's still probably Washington that has the cachet to maybe fight their way back. Utah, when a group's getting together, I still think it matters what your name is.
Sure.
That connotation, even though these are really good people at the College Football Playoff Committee, I'm telling you, what have we learned the last few years? Your reputation matters. Washington, see if you agree with this, Danny, has a much better national reputation than Utah.
Yeah, they do.
So Washington needs to be their representative. Washington needs to run the table the rest of the way. And they got a game today that they actually could lose. They lost to the Cal already. This is going to be a competitive game, and the Pac-12 has got to be rooting like crazy. They must have a win here and not have a non-conference loss.
Oregon's the 16th-ranked team, somehow at 2-1, and they play at Stanford. Stanford, it's kind of a respect game for Stanford. You know, they don't want to start to see their program take a step back. There's questions about whether their coach was just successful because of a carryover from Jim Harbaugh. Now, it's probably long enough that he deserves more credit than that, but a trip-up season this year raises those questions.
Yeah. Last week was a shocker. I haven't seen anything like that from Stanford. They never scare me, kind of like Wisconsin. A very solid team, count them in the top 20. If you're getting ready to play them, it's an all-day sucker to try to beat those guys. They're so fundamentally sound, smart, et cetera. They don't have dump seasons, dump games. Well, that's not true. Last week they got killed by Central Florida and looked like they weren't in the same league. And today they're playing a team that is better than them coming in, a lot of flash and dash of Oregon. Normally what we'd see in this game is, hey, Danny, I don't know how it's going to turn out, but you know Stanford's going to be fighting like crazy. They'll keep it close. If they have to score, they will. Usually this game would be 27-24 or 38-35. Didn't matter. Whatever Stanford needed to do, watch the end of the game. It's a toss-up game. Today, with one of the best quarterbacks in the country, Herbert, at Oregon, they could get run off the field by Oregon. And there's the other team. Oregon or Washington needs to show for the Pac-12. So this is a dangerous time for Stanford football.
Virginia is building quite a sports program in the two major sports. They're ranked again. They'll play Old Dominion today. But we don't have much time, so let's get into the big game of the day, Notre Dame at Georgia. Notre Dame, I don't see them winning this game. I don't. But I think it lies on their quarterback, who can be good but not great. How do you assess the game?
Hey, 1970, 1960, 1980, maybe 1990, Notre Dame was such a national program and all the Catholics and everything. You just thought, what a big game. They're going to show up. But recently, they're just another good school, Danny. They're not must-see TV in my mind. I don't turn on to NBC when they're at home. We're trying to build this game up, but Notre Dame just doesn't have the juice. They were in the college football playoff last year. They got ran off the field. Everyone wants to say it's because Clemson's so great. I think Notre Dame's good, not great. Georgia should beat them.
And we'll see if that happens. It's a CBS primetime game. Some other games. Arizona State trying to remain undefeated. There's your long shot hope in the Pac-12. And late night TV, if you need to win a bet at the end of the day, UCLA will get trumped by Washington State. Ride the points. Bye-bye.
I'll watch.
We got another 30 seconds. There we go.
Why are you trying to get rid of us,
Danny? I'm not trying to get rid of you.
Enjoy your college football Saturday, hopefully as much as I am. I can't wait, Danny.
That's right.
Minutes away from kickoff.
This is a bye week for Stan, too. And so, literally, how many college football games do you think you'll cast an eye on for at least 10 minutes today?
22.
There you go. Stan Weber, 22 games for him today. How many for you? KU coming up a little later right here.
Study that after
make a little notch, have a piece of paper.